Welcome to the Bumblecast, everyone. I am your host, Ian Flynn, the Bumble King, and joining me is my figment of my imagination, Kyle Krause.
I think that's true. I am a figment of everybody's imagination. Everyone who's listening.
You are the embodiment of the collective consciousness of the human race.
Well, that's kind of sad if that's the if I'm the collective consciousness of the human race.
I think we could do a lot worse. I really do. We're good.
This is probably true.
It's like, I want to do a podcast, but I need someone to do all the heavy lifting. Boink! And then there was Kyle.
Come on. This is the easy part.
Like Athena, sprung from my thoughts. You were born into existence from my very will.
I do the easy parts.
And as much as I would like to be Jupiter in this scenario, I think I've got the body type more of Zeus, so oh well.
Hey. Wasn't Zeus like a super muscular buff dude in the Hercules movie? The Disney movie?
Yeah, but that was one of the many inaccuracies of that movie. So
has a Disney movie based on a historical event ever been in any way historically accurate?
Well, do the Greek myths really count as historically accurate?
No. I don't think so. Maybe.
So what have you been up to lately, Kyle?
Well, I haven't been up to too much, but I had some news come across the desk over here at KNGI Studios that I had to share, because so many people, I really appreciate this, by the way, were very kind to send me news that Sega Amusements has officially announced Daytona Championship USA 3 for release this year to arcades.
Yeah, I thought I heard someone cheering from across the continent. I guess that was you.
Yes, it was. Daytona Championship USA 3. I do not much care for the name. I'm just going to say that right out. I don't know why it's called that. I cannot figure out why. They shoehorned a championship into the middle of Daytona and USA. It's this really weird thing. They could have called it like Daytona USA 3 Championship or Daytona USA 3 Championship Edition, even though there's only one edition currently announced. But it seems weird to me. I don't know what that is. Like, maybe it's a localization translation thing that just didn't come over very well, or that's just what they want to call it. So
could be that the focus testing groups looked at that title more than the other one?
I don't know. That doesn't really seem like a focus tested title to me. It just seems weird. Anyway, it's pretty exciting, though, because it looks like a great game. The teaser trailer was just released, just this past weekend, I think. They unveiled it at an arcade trade show that I can't remember the name of off the top of my head just recently, and it's shaping up to be pretty good. It's apparently based on the original game engine, which I'm not exactly sure how they did that, unless they are using the version that they used for the Xbox 360 and PS3 port. That would make sense. But it does have very, very much updated graphics. The cars are all based on modern NASCAR stock cars, so it's not my favorite look. I don't really much care for how modern stock cars look, but it's okay. And they are bringing back the original three tracks with the original music. Takanobu Mitsuyoshi is on board as composer, which makes me very happy. Yeah, he's been in Sega forever. He's still there. So, of course, he's still involved, which is good. And I'm trying to think what else. There are three new tracks. One of them is an actual recreation of Daytona International Speedway. So the game finally has the track that it is named after in it. I'm not sure how that's going to play in an arcade setting, because the actual Daytona International Speedway is a very long, wide, sweeping track with very kind of lazy turns. There's really nothing tricky about it. It's basically just hold the gas down and go fast. There's no hairpin turns or anything, so I'm kind of wondering how that'll play in an arcade game.
It would come down to raw skill.
I think
who
that
has the nuanced ability.
Maybe, or it might just be really boring, because there's like no brakes or anything in real life. You don't even touch the brakes normally, so it's kind of weird. But I'm looking forward to at least checking it out and seeing it. There's two more new tracks which haven't been revealed yet. The original three tracks from the first game are back. The graphics have been completely overhauled and updated. They got rid of the casino theme for the beginner track, though. The 3-7 Speedway, which is named 3-7 Speedway because it has a casino theme. That seems to be gone, which is kind of disappointing, but I guess maybe there's something about portraying gambling in a game in arcades that I don't really know. Yeah. So, unfortunately, that seems to have been lost, which I'm kind of disappointed with. The teaser trailer is only about 30 seconds long. No, it's about a minute long. So there isn't much there to go off of, but it's shaping up to be pretty fun. It is based on PC hardware, from what I understand. So maybe we will see a PC port and possibly a console port. I'm hopeful for that at some point. And yeah, that's about it. The cabinets look fairly standard, which is about what we'd expect. It's about Sega standard for the last, yeah, I want to say half decade or so, standard racing setup. So nothing too special there. You can have up to 8 players connected and playing all at the same time. There's a screen built into the top marquee where you can, where spectators can watch player reactions, because there's a camera pointed at the driver. And then you can see their reactions up on the screen. The spectators can. And it also shows like tournament information up there. It makes it really easy to run tournaments, which a lot of arcade operators do with Daytona. So cool. They've made it arcade operator friendly in that respect. So I'm excited for it. I hope it comes to an arcade near me. It probably will. But arcades are still around, but they're a bit on the wane, so I'm curious to see how successful this version of Daytona is going to be compared to the ones released, you know, 18 and 22 years ago, because those were huge, but arcades have definitely dwindled since then. So it'll be interesting to see what happens.
Well, given the amount of effort they seem to have put into this, they must be confident with it to risk that much.
Yeah. You can hear a little bit of a snippet of the new arrangement for Let's Go Away in the teaser trailer. So if you're interested in that, you want to hear what Daytona music sounds like 22 years later, check it out. What have you been up to, Ian?
Oh, man, I know I always say this, but work, because since the last show, two more projects dropped into my lap and two others kicked into high gear. So I am busy, 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 busy.
Woohoo!
Also, recently did the Sonic and Sega Fan Jam, which was a small show down in Savannah, Georgia. Very small operation, but with lots of star power. There was myself, Aaliyah Baker, penciler Tracy Yardley, and Adam Bryce Thomas, the famed voice actor of Dr. Eggman, Mike Pollock, and the composer for Sonic Mania, T-Lopes.
Ah, yes, that guy is awesome.
And the genius behind the Sonic Twitter, Aaron Weber.
That guy is also awesome.
And it was just so many people. And it was a well-run show. And got to hobnob and rub elbows with these official-type peoples. And got to actually play a little bit of Sonic Mania at long last.
Oh, nice.
I played Studiopolis, which is, oh, Kyle, it feels like a Sonic game.
It looks like
that's all there is to it. Yeah. It doesn't feel like a recreation. It doesn't feel like here's Sonic with the latest gimmick. It feels like a Sonic game.
I'd hope so.
The momentum is there. The running is there. The jumping is there. Everything feels just right. And it's so fun to just play around in the level.
I'd hope so, because this is Christian Whitehead we're talking about, and as far as I'm concerned, that guy has done no wrong so far.
Yeah, so I was a little disappointed that it wasn't the build that had Mirage Saloon or Tails and Knuckles, because I'm greedy and I want it all right now. But what was there was just, oh, so much fun. And it was also fun because some of the folks who were there, you know, they enjoyed the Sonic aspect of it, but they didn't quite get all of the in-jokes, so it was fun going, and there's that, and there's that, and there's that, and there's that, and did you know about this? And they're like, oh, that's pretty cool.
Did you see this van here? It's painted like the car from Daytona.
Did you see the train go by? It's a CPO and Cope on it. Come on, people!
Yeah! I still don't understand why CPU and Cope are sitting there in Spring Yard Zone.
It's part of the lore now.
Do you have any insight on that at all?
I've heard some speculation in the past, but nothing that I could truly follow or get behind. So okay. I'm just going to say it's there. It's a fun visual gag.
It's just silly. Yeah.
Let it be the end joke.
It's just weird. I heard you had some fun with Mike Pollock in a car.
Oh, on the way to dinner, we were all carpooling, and the discussion came up of GPS systems. I think it was Aaliyah who said that, you know, they need to do an Eggman version of one. And, you know, as we're going along, he screams in the voice, turn left. And that is the funniest thing in the world.
We really need that. We do need that.
I mean, no soft coaxing, just this demanding, screeching voice.
Yes. Yes. I want that right now. I wanted that yesterday.
We are getting off on a wild tangent, but that's kind of the point of this episode, because this episode, and it kind of ties into the theme of today's episode. Going back a little peek behind the curtain, we may have addressed this earlier, but one of the things we agreed upon when we started this show was we wanted it to be very easy listening.
Right.
And the two topics we were never going to touch on were religion and politics. In today's post-election world, politics is a very, very big thing.
Yeah.
A kind of inescapable thing. A kind of oppressive way on your every thought. You can't escape it because it's on the news and it's in your Facebook feed and it's all over Twitter and casual conversations with the dentist bring it up and you just can't get away from it.
Yeah.
So that kind of brings us to what this show is about and what I guess entertainment is about overall, escapism.
Indeed.
And I don't mean the kind of self-destructive escapism. So let's touch on that point first, because there is too much of a good thing. Yeah. And when you have a game that's really engrossing or a AAA hour-long podcast with people that you love or music or movies or comics or books or whatever, it's very easy to lose yourself in those worlds, in that distraction, because, I mean, let's face it, sometimes the world sucks.
Yeah, especially this year.
And, yeah, you know, this year's been pretty rough. And as a friend said, you know, you don't really want to say, well, it can't be any worse than next year, because you can just imagine 2017 putting down his drink and saying, hold my beer, watch this.
Yeah. Ooh, boy. Yeah.
But at the same time, you do need a break.
Right.
Because let's say you're out in the field or you're doing manual labor or something that real people do for a living. You can't do it 24/7 nonstop. You can't go without a break. You need some time to just relax, to let your mind go, and to just detense, because it's not just physically healthy to let your body rest and recuperate. It's mentally healthy. Case in point, one of the many, many jobs I have right now, lots and lots of writing, lots of adaptation of text. It's, I guess I can say this without getting into too much hot water, it's basically a localization gig. the English is serviceable, but it isn't quite English English. And you have to think about it. You know, how would you phrase it better while still keeping the actual meaning of the line? How do you best represent the character that is speaking it and such? And after a whole day worth of that, trying to figure out what somebody wants and trying to convey it in a way that is both true to the original, but understandable, relatable, that's exhausting. Mm-hmm. And so for the next day, I kind of had to chill out, play a game, don't really think about anything, just recoup. And then the next day, feel the neurons firing again. All right, jump right back into it. Which is good because, like, four clients got back to me at the same time. It's like, oh, boy. So, and that's what this show is about. Giving everyone a chance to say, oh, hey, that's cool. Or, hey, I agree with them. Or, wow, this is just filling up noise, but Rush Hour is boring. Yeah, something. Something to take the tedium off your mind. So, I guess I actually turn this into some kind of discussion. When things get a little too heavy for you, Kyle, what do you do to take a load off your mind?
Honestly, lately my vice has been television and internet video and podcasts. Those are my main things. Video games, I don't know what it is. Maybe it's just because I have so many and I have like no motivation to play them because I have so many. It's just like this weight on my shoulders that's just like, oh god, I have so many games just sitting here waiting to be played, and I can't decide which one I want to play. And so maybe I'll like open one up and play it for, you know, 30 minutes or so and be like, okay, I'm done. I don't know what it is. I love video games. I've loved video games my entire life, but it's just been, it's been difficult to really commit the time to playing them lately. So I guess I'm more interested in passive experiences these days, which is, I don't know if it's sad, really. I mean, a lot of people enjoy that stuff, and that's perfectly fine, and obviously I enjoy it. But, you know, it's, I don't know what it is. I guess it's just,
it's escapism from your escapism.
Right, exactly. It's like, oh, crap, I don't want to play a game. I just want to sit and watch it, or watch television, just watch a show or a movie or something. I don't even really watch movies because those are big time commitments. 2 hours is a long time.
And the way that movies are going now, they're getting longer and longer because The Hobbit and the Lord of the Rings trilogies prove that people will sit there for as long as you want, as long as they're entertained.
Well, yeah. Well, back in the, you know, back in the 40s, 50s and stuff like that, we had these 4 or 5 hour long epic movies. They usually had intermissions, but still.
Yeah, but that's because there really wasn't a lot else out there.
That's very true. There wasn't much to do. You just go spend all day at the movies.
And in this day and age, you can't escape the media that's everywhere, which is, absolutely, you know, the danger of the escapism that I touched on earlier, because it's really easy to drown in all the content that's out there. Mm-hmm. Or, heck, just get confused over which way you want to go. Do you want to binge on Netflix, or do you want to go through your Wednesday stack because you haven't read it in 3 months, or. And like you said, you know, getting into games, do you really want to sit down and get into the commitment of, okay, where was I last time, or how far do I want to go, versus something you can just pick up and let it flow over you? There's a lot of different options out there.
Yeah, I think I tend to value these days more casual experiences when it comes to video games. Something you can just pop in and out of real easily, mm-hmm, rather than something you have to really commit time and effort into. I don't know if that's a bad thing or a good thing, but that's kind of where I am at this point because, you know, I'm at work all day. And I work in an industrial job, a very, very menial task environment of high repetition, very noisy, and very dirty and smelly. Yeah, it's I wouldn't call it pleasant. I mean, it pays, and lately it's been kind of okay. But that's where I work all day. And, you know, when I'm on my feet for like nine and a half hours a day. I just want to come home and just sit down and relax and not do anything.
And after a full day of pushing buttons, the last thing you want to do is push buttons and make more noise.
Yeah, maybe something like that. Although I, you know, I spend a lot of time at the computer where I'm pushing keyboard buttons all day, but
yeah, it's enough.
But still, it's not the same as, I guess it's not really the same as a game with menial tasks in it, but yeah. So what do you do? What do you do to unwind? I know obviously you play a lot of video games.
I've actually kind of fallen off that bandwagon. I was playing Borderlands 2 pretty hardcore, and then I got kind of burned out. I wanted something a little grindy, but not in the same vein, so I picked up the Disgaea collection because a friend of mine had highly recommended it, and I heard it was kind of grindy, and it's a JRPG, so hey, why not? That could be fun. I didn't realize it was a tactical RPG.
Ah, yes.
I am not good with tactical RPGs. I'm not good with tactics. Like, solitaire single player is about as tactical as I can get. Like, oh, I put that red 4 on that black 5. I'm a genius.
So Risk is out of the question for you.
Oh man, I've got horror stories of games of Risk that lasted 2 days. But that was a bit too much for me because it wasn't fast paced enough, I guess.
Yeah.
It was enjoyable. I want to get back to it at some point, but I haven't really completed the tutorial quest. So I picked up the Genesis collection because I figured, you know, there's been so much talk of reliving the Genesis days. And, you know, growing up, I had a Genesis in the house, but I was more of a licensed game, limited budget library than diving into all of the hallmarks. So if I'm going to talk a big game, I need to know what I'm talking about. I need to play these.
Right.
And it's like, okay, this is fun and all, but there's Pokemon looming on the horizon, and I know that's going to eat my life, so I don't want to start Shining Force or Phantasy Star because I have an RPG I'm about to get into, and I'm not going to have a lot of time to play anything, and that's going to be it. And the one thing that did devour my life, I was going to say I haven't been playing a lot of games, but I am wrong. The recent major, major update to Animal Crossing New Leaf added a component where you can get some of the mini games from the Wii Party game if you find the right collectible items. And there is a very simple survival party game. You get 3 characters, and each species within the Animal Crossing universe gets a special perk, whether it be how they move across the map or how they manage food or how they encounter enemies, etc. And you have 5 to 9 days, or is it 12, depending on the difficulty of the map, to navigate the map, keep your party fed, and not die to animals. And you have to find parts to build a raft within the time limit to escape. It's a very simple premise, very simple gameplay. It is addictive. You form a deep emotional bond with these fluffy, colorful characters as they fight tarantulas and centipedes, and yes, that Tree of Limits does look delicious. Grab them all.
Obsession.
It is. It really is. But otherwise, I find myself devoting a lot of time to YouTube. There's a number of channels I follow.
Yeah, same with me.
Big shout out to Team 4-Star for all the content they produce regularly. And sometimes it's just nice to veg to these things. Yeah. Yes, I could spend my time playing a video game rather than watch other people play a video game, but I'm not spending money on that video game.
Yeah.
And I get delightful color commentary with the video. So it all works out.
Yeah. I like Let's Plays. Some of them, anyway. There's a select few that I enjoy.
There's one I know I've mentioned in the past, Chip and Ironicus, who do an absolutely phenomenal, high quality, very, very in-depth form of Let's Play. And if you haven't checked them out, I highly recommend it. They're currently going through Uncharted 4, and it's just amazing amount of detail that's in the game.
Mm-hmm. There's been one channel that I watch pretty regularly that's like not video game related, and I've kind of gone back through and watched most of their videos, and it's Regular Car Reviews.
The reviews come out regularly, or they only review regular cars?
Both.
Well, there we go then.
Yes. Yes. They don't always only review regular cars, but mostly it's just regular cars. It's just two guys who they review a car, or they drive a car. Like, someone brings a car to them, and they will drive it and then give their review of it. And it's, okay, they usually do, like, very polished kind of, or not super polished, but, you know, they're scripted reviews, but they're also, like, very, very jokey and hilarious. Okay. And also sometimes they review a couple motorcycles here and there, which some people get pissed off because they're like, oh, it's not a car.
Only on the internet, really.
It's
a show about motor vehicles. Fine.
It's funny because every time they review a motorcycle, at some point in the video, just a big title card flashes up on the screen that says, not a car. It's just like, yeah, they just undercut everyone who's yelling, not a car, in the comments. Mostly they just review regular cars, but sometimes they get some really interesting stuff in there, like a DeLorean with a Corvette V8 in it, which is freaking ridiculous and awesome, and I want one. And let me see what else. I'm trying to remember what else. The guys who actually run the channel found and restored and then modified a old 1960 Ford Falcon, which is basically like the most regular of regular 1960s cars. It's not special whatsoever, but they took it and they basically, they kept it the same. It looks the same, but everything underneath is completely different. All the suspension and everything's been upgraded. It's got a brand new, super powerful V8, and it's a ridiculous car. But it looks normal on the outside. So, and of course, they review things like the Chevy Sonic, which is, you know, a super boring, practical, modern car. Or the Chevrolet Chevette, which was a piece of crap from the middle, from the 1960s. Let's see what else. A 1966 Plymouth Barracuda, which is not really a regular car.
I'm going to question if you're just making things up because you know I don't follow cars.
Right. No, it's fine.
You're just making things up at this point.
Here we go. A 1996 Chevrolet Cavalier. That is a regular car. That is the most regular of regular cars. So, yeah, I really enjoyed that. Someone linked me to the first DeLorean review they did. They've done three different DeLorean reviews because they've found different DeLoreans. They reviewed a stock one and then a modified one modified by the new DeLorean Motor Car Company. And then they found the V8, the Corvette V8 DeLorean. So they've reviewed all three of them. And someone linked me to their first review and I was hooked from there because they're hilarious.
I didn't realize there were that many DeLoreans still on the road.
Oh, yeah. There's quite a few out there.
So somebody time traveling. Nope. We're not getting it. This is escapism.
So, yes. But that's one thing I've spent a lot of time on, especially recently, is going through a lot of those, a lot of their videos, which are awesome and hilarious. And I highly recommend them, especially if you know a thing or two about cars.
Well, as much as we like to escape, it looks like we've kind of run out of road when it comes to the actual topic, because I think everyone agrees that, yes, sometimes you just need a break. And yes, media is good.
Yeah. It can be dangerous to go overboard, but, you know, you don't have to not partake.
Exactly. So now that we've revolutionized the discussion on that topic, let's move on to the winner of our Bumble Raffle. Now, the Bumble Raffle is a contest we have here on the show where you win your very own signed comic from me, which helps with that whole escapism thing. If you are a patron over at patreon.com/bumblecast, you are automatically entered into every single drawing. And if you don't want to go over to patreon.com/bumblecast and toss a couple dollars our way, you can write in to bumblecast@yahoo.com, and you have to write in for each episode, but you'll get the same entry as everyone else. There's no priority to the draw. So this winner is...
Connell T!
Thank you for supporting us for so long, Connell T, and we will get that book to you as soon as we can. We'll be contacting you to get your mailing info and get that out to you.
Awesome.
So now we're on to the, probably the main reason we have any listeners, the true moment of escapism, the moment where you lose yourself in my sultry voice as I answer your questions. That's right, it's time for the Q&A. One of these days we need to do just like a little jingle for the Q&A section. Q&A, you ask questions and I sometimes answer them, Q&A.
Perfect.
No, it's not.
What do I know?
Now, how do you get your question answered on the Q&A? It's very simple. You can write into us at bumblecast@yahoo.com. You can do it on Twitter, either to @IanFlynnBKC or @KyleJCRB with the hashtag Bumblecast. Or if you're a patron over at patreon.com/bumblecast, you can ask it anywhere in the messages, in the comments, whatever, we'll see it. Also, if you go over to patreon.com/bumblecast, it's almost like I'm plugging that for some reason.
Weird.
And toss $5 our way, you get bumped into the priority Q&A. Now, every question that's asked we put into a queue, we'll get to it when we get to it. But the priority Q&A gets, well, priority.
Yes.
It's aptly named.
You get moved to the front of the line.
Exactly. Pull back the rope and everything. The big scary bouncer's like, you're all right, you can go on ahead.
Yep. Red carpet.
I don't know.
Red carpet why treatment.
I don't know why we spend all that money on the rope and the bodyguard and all that, because, I mean, it's just us, but whatever.
We got to look professional.
Yeah, exactly, for the completely not visual podcast.
Yeah, I mean, why not? That's what this is for, right? Isn't that why I bought this suit?
Well,
this is my pod. This is my pod. This is my podcasting suit.
Please, somebody, we need fan art of Kyle in his podcasting suit.
No, that's quite okay.
Shall we move on to that priority Q&A then?
Yes, indeed. Let's do it. This one comes from the delicious Yams 88. Is there any other particular works of fiction / nonfiction that have helped inspire your writing for the comic series? This would not be including the game series itself, of course.
Well, yeah, of course.
Obviously.
I feel like we've covered this one a few times.
Yeah, I think so.
Influences and whatnot.
Similar, yeah.
There's a number of movies and books and comics and music out there that I've grown up with and been influenced by. So yes, there is. And I really feel like we've run down this list like 2 or 3 times in the show. So feel free to review the Bumblecast, and there you go. You get to escape for a few more hours as you listen to me re-answer the question, because I don't remember that I've answered this question. So I answer the question. What question? The question I've already answered.
I think so. Yes. Okay. Our next question comes from Sam Cybercat. I like Cybercat. That's a cool cat right there.
Sammy's been around for a while.
I
remember Sammy from the old Bum King forum days and such.
Cybercat sounds like the best kind of cat.
Yeah. Yeah, it really would be.
Yeah. Anyway.
All the pseudo affection of a real cat, but without the litter box.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that's the best part.
It provides its own laser pointer.
Yes. Cybercat. Make it happen.
Anyway, Sam's question is,
yes, would you guys recommend the Ruby Spears Mega Man cartoon to someone who didn't grow up with it, or do you think it's a series that relies heavily on its nostalgia factor?
I would say yes to both.
Yes.
If you are a fan of Mega Man in the broad sense, a fan of the history of the franchise, I think you kind of owe it to yourself to hunt it down and give it a watch.
Do yourself a favor.
Just to experience it. Yeah. And not just for Mega Man, but for understanding the adaptation of licensed properties, especially in the early 90s and is a historical document of how things have progressed over time, how we as a species have evolved since then. Mm-hmm. And it, that one episode where they somehow turn into robot cavemen springs to mind, and that's even funnier now. It is definitely an acquired taste.
Yes.
And I think anyone saying that it is enjoyable on its own merits without the nostalgia goggles on does not realize they are wearing the heaviest pair of nostalgia goggles there are. But that isn't to say it's not enjoyable.
Yeah.
It's just definitely not Mega Man as you would think of Mega Man traditionally. But it's full of some very interesting stuff. I'm still a little sad that I never got around to my Lion Men cameo idea.
you have to kind of take it with a grain of salt, I guess.
Because more than one.
Well, yeah. But because this was at a time where video game adaptations were, like, weird. Strange, because there wasn't a whole lot to work with. So when it came to when it came to Mega Man, there was actually quite a bit of stuff to work with for Mega Man, I'd say, in the sense that there was a little bit more of a story than just the very basic one that games like Super Mario Brothers would have had, or even Sonic the Hedgehog, which they obviously went a completely different direction in, with at least with the SAT-AM stuff.
Right. Now, all that said, I will say that the Ruby Spears cartoon, I think, is a little more faithful than the Captain N interpretation.
A little?
I think it's definitely more in spirit.
Yes, yes.
It has the right color, for instance.
Yes.
And I will say this for the Ruby Spears cartoon, it did try to give Roll a more active role, har har. Than she's had in the games. So there's something to that.
I like Ruby Spears' role a lot, actually. I think she's pretty cool. So, yeah, that was definitely something that was really good for it. But I do like how you did take some of the personality quirks from the Ruby Spears cartoon for the Robot Masters. I think that was a nice touch.
It's a little bit of a mix of that and the obscure personality trivia from the Japanese manuals. And
well, that's true, too, yeah.
A little bit from the gameplay itself, although, you know, there's only so much you can glean from the 8-bit games.
Yeah, you took inspiration from everywhere, and I'm glad you did, because it made for a really good comic, and I'm sad. Now I'm sad it's not around anymore.
Hope springs eternal. It may come back one day.
Oh, I hope so. All right. And this last priority question comes from John B. Since the Sonic Boom television series and the Wii U game were being developed around the same time, but going in two different directions as far as tone was concerned, did that cause confusion over what direction the Sonic Boom comic was going to take, or did somebody on top make it clear to base it more on the TV show?
I'm trying to remember how the timing of this worked out, because I'm pretty sure that we had, at least in terms of development of the comic, a decent buffer between the game's release and the show's release. So we had an idea of which was which. And I'm pretty sure that the show had already started to air a bit. And therefore, we had a general idea of how it was going. And more importantly, we had the fans' reactions to it, which were overall very positive about the show. So we also, because the producer, Bill Freeberger, very nice man, was kind of involved with World Unite doing some of the off panels, there was a little bit of back and forth, a little bit of inside suggestion, I guess, mm-hmm. over the tone of the show. And to make it something different than regular Sonic and Universe, we decided to go the more comedy route. It was also because Sonic X, the comic, was well received, and that was a little more comedy angled. Not so much as Boom was, obviously, but it was definitely a different tone than the mainline book. And I kind of wanted to do something different like that again. So all of that came together to decide to make Boom the comedy continuity light book to go with the show, because the show was going to go on for, you know, the whole season. And it would be much easier to align that theme than to a game that, you know, is out and done.
Yeah. Does the game have a tone? Its tone is very bland.
I think at least the Wii U game had a kind of fantasy adventure vibe going on. Definitely lighter in tone than some of the Sonic stuff. But I also feel like that it had so many ideas and so little time and team to realize it.
Yeah.
That a lot of that was lost. I would love to see a fully realized version of Rise of Lyric as it was intended, because it looked like it was going to be really interesting. Yeah. Shattered Crystal, I think, had the same kind of fairly light vibe to it. Now, there's some honestly funny cutscenes in that. And I've yet to play Fire and Ice, but I'm sure it's along the same line, if not more in tune with the show. So I wouldn't say that there is a huge disparity between game boom and cartoon boom. They're all generally lighter fare, but yeah, I would say that the cartoon is definitely more comedic based.
Yeah.
And that was the moment that we went with.
All right. Well, time to get into the standard Q&A questions picked from our queue. This one comes from Da Big RG. Is Circus Park Eggman's doing, or are we assuming it's a remnant of the four civilizations? Spoilers?
Pretty sure Circus Park is the shadow level. Let me double check that.
Circus Park.
I'm not sure why you think it was one of the four civilizations, unless you're thinking of Carnival Night, because that was the one that was on Angel Island and doesn't make any sense really to be there. Circus Park was from Shadow the Hedgehog, and you could pretty much assume that's a theme park, yeah, either by Eggman's creation or modified by him. In terms of Casino Night, and come to think of it, what was the multiplayer version of that stage called? Was that what's it called? No, that was Balloon Park.
Yeah, Balloon Park is Balloon Park and Carnival Night.
All right. Too many carnivals and too many balloons. Too many circus themes. But anyway, yes, whatever was built on Angel Island, I would assume that's an Eggman construction because he has a fixation on theme parks. But for the actual circus park, I think it's open to interpretation.
All right. This next one comes from Bucellarian Theme. In the recent issues of the Sonic comic, a couple of characters have been seen to be rather taken with the Good Doctor, Eggboss Thunderbolt and Wendy Witchcock. Now, specifically in the case of the former, was this intentional from the outset, or was it something you picked up on from the fans, i.e., did you notice how many people in the fandom shipped TB and Eggman given her loyalty, and so you decided to throw them a bone by playing it up further? In regards to the latter, is Wendy actually an admirer of Eggman, or was she merely flirting and the fans, as they are wont to do, simply overreacted to something that was intended as just a panel gag and nothing else?
All right, arm the torpedoes. It's time to sink some ships. First and foremost, there is no romantic angle between Thunderbolt and Eggman. I've seen that one and kind of scratched my head, but it's the internet. It's going to be. She is an absolute fangirl. She is ardently loyal, but there's no romantic angle to it at all. The whole thinking behind Thunderbolt was having a truly vicious, completely loyal minion to Eggman that was a tiny, cute, fluffy animal. That's the joke. That's the gag.
Mm-hmm.
And it's unfortunate that folks have taken that and tried to put a romantic angle on it, but, you know, it's the internet. Can't control that. Wendy, however, is definitely more amorous in her reactions to Eggman, but Eggman, being Eggman, really has no interest in anyone outside of himself, and please do not take that any further than just the fact that he's an egomaniac, okay? Come on, people. Work with me here. But yes, the joke is supposed to be that the creepy, hideous troll woman finds the fat, bald megalomaniac attractive, and he does not return the affection.
That's a perfect pair.
I feel so weirdly mechanical describing it like that. know, like, here's the manual of how to understand these characters. Bullet point one. This is the emotional reaction. Bullet point two. But I guess that's how you have to approach it to understand how the structure is sometimes.
Yeah, some people need that help. That's why TV Tropes exists.
Is it?
Okay, no. TV Tropes exists as a hole in time. That is the ultimate escapism right there. All right. Our final question comes from Unknown Shadow 675. Who would win in a fight, Razor or Espio?
Well, that depends. Pirates or ninjas?
Yeah. I'm going to go with Espio.
Well, if you're a pirate fan, then no, you're wrong.
Oh.
Obviously.
Okay.
I mean, the minute you're on the ship deck, that's all she wrote. If you're a ninja fan, then of course you're absolutely right. The pirate would never see it coming.
Yeah. What about a pirate ninja?
Well, now you're just being silly.
Oh, come on.
Unless you had, like, country-sanctioned shogun privateers.
I guess my rogue in D&D is just, like, not real then. Because they're a pirate ninja.
Well, see, since I thought you into being, you thought that rogue into being, and so now we've got kind of inception level of conception here.
Ah, yes. Weird. So, technically, that's your character. That's really weird.
Wow, we're going down the rabbit hole now. But anyway, get back to the question. You can actually see a little bit of that with the current arc in Sonic Universe, The Case of the Pirate Princess, which stars both Razor and Espio and pirates.
Nice. Perfect.
How was that for a segue and a
plug? That's some good timing. There we go. I got the first issue sitting right here in front of me. Maybe I should read it.
You should.
I should.
It's been Escape from the World for a few pages.
It's been sitting here for a few days now. I should read
it. It's still just as ripe, I assure you.
Yes. I just haven't had the chance to, you know, sit down and read anything. Anyway, that's going to do it for this week's Q&A.
As always, we're going to wrap up the show with a shout out to all the people who have made this show possible. Thank you very much, all you lovely patrons, for your continued support. You are all beautiful people. Give a shout out to Daniel H., Zephyr Flame, John B., Sam Cybercat, Deus Miles, Yams88, Mike B., Fancy Fool, Connell P., congratulations again, Daniel L., Samuel P., Justin G., Jennifer R., Candylicious Cartoons, Andrew F., John M., S. Yavarovich 9X, Alex P., and James K. Thank you all once again. If you want to follow me, go over to bumbleking.com. That has my portfolio, my weekly, semi-weekly blog stuff, all my contact info, all that happy stuff. Or go over to Twitter, at IanFlynnBKC.
And you can find out what I'm doing on Twitter, at KyleJCRB. Or you can head on over to KNGI.org, where you can find archived episodes of this show and many, many others. I'm in the midst of Nintendo November on my other shows, Game Fuel and probably Nitro Game Injection, if I get to do one this month. So we're doing all Nintendo stuff all the time. I just wrapped up a Kirby special this weekend, and the next episode coming up is going to be all Mario Kart. So you're going to want to tune in. You don't want to miss it. Every Saturday at 7 p.m. Eastern Time over on our friends at 8bitx.com. Or, of course, archived episodes on KNGI.org.
That's going to wrap us up for Bumblecast episode 31. We'll see you in 2 weeks for episode 32. Take it easy, everybody.
Bye-bye for now. I am changing my Oh, no, hold on. I don't need to put this in here.
Your turn for pickup.
Yes. Pickup.
Have fun editing this one.
Yeah, whatever. Remember, I listen at 1.5 speed, so everything sounds hilarious, and it doesn't take as long. Okay, here we go. 3, 2, 1.
That's why I say make a note.
I'll make a note. I'll make all the notes. Making all the notes. There we go. Notes are all made.
Yay, notes.
I like notes. Notes. What do you mean notes? Notes are for music. Just like patients. Patients are for hospitals.
Oh, Lordy.
I'll never forget that one. It took me forever to figure that joke out. I was a kid the first time I heard it, so it took me a while. And it was Sonic who made that joke, so it was all the more confusing.
I feel like I came up with that one on my own and felt like I was so smart. And then it's like, oh no, everyone has already made that joke for the past few hundred years.
Yeah, no, Sonic... It was on Sonic Sat AM. Forget what episode it was. I think it was the one episode where one character appeared one time. It was like they were acting like he was a freedom fighter this whole entire time, and he was only in this one episode.
Yeah, that
it was
that
really was interesting. It was really awkward.
Hi there, and thanks for listening to the Bumblecast. If you liked our show, be sure to hit the subscribe button and consider supporting us on Patreon. We have some great rewards as well as big plans on how to make the show even better. Also, rate and review our show on iTunes. It gets more folks listening and helps us out, so we definitely appreciate it. Original music composed by Ken Coda Snyder, used with permission. Find more of his music at bc.s3m.us and find the theme song at noisechanradio.bandcamp.com, available as a pay-what-you-want download.
The beautiful people. The song is so 90s.
Yeah, but it's fun.
I know, it is. It is.
All right, so that's our after credits blurb.
Well, you said beautiful people, and I couldn't get it out of my head.